Hello, everyone, and welcome to From Tip to Tail, a podcast dedicated to animal welfare. This podcast is sponsored by Cuddly. Cuddly is the only crowdfunding platform built specifically for animal welfare organizations worldwide. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Sydney. We've spent years working with animal rescues and have seen such amazing innovation, strength, and heart.
Having this personal connection with rescuers has made us more informed, grateful, and inspired. We hope by giving you an inside look, you will be too.
Today, we're going to be sitting down with Rachel Smith, CEO of Humane Research Australia, an organization advocating for scientifically valid and humane non-animal methods of research. They have a vision for a future where no animals suffer in the name of science, and medical progress is advanced through the use of scientifically valid non-animal methodologies. Why does animal testing still exist in the modern world? This is a question that we hear so much, and it is such a valid point. Have we not found an alternative method of research? Well, the answer is yes. And we were so excited to bring Rachel on to discuss the narratives and realities involved with this practice and how we as a society can transition out of it. If you like this episode, be sure to click that subscribe button to listen in on similar stories. We are so excited. So let's get started.
Hi there, Rachel. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, we're so honored. I feel like this is going to be such a wonderful episode because I know you have so many insights. Before we get into all the juicy details that you have and just all that knowledge that you've learned over all these years, we always like to talk a little bit about little Rachel. Yep. So were you always an animal lover, and did you grow up just surrounded by so many animals?
Yes, I have always been an animal lover. I didn't grow up with a large number of animals, just one dog. But since probably about the age of 7, I've been very passionate. So I was always taking leaflets into schools and raising funds for different organizations and collecting petitions and all those kind of things and fundraising and joining organizations. So I think it's just some people are born with that. And that was me. So I was always trying to convert other people into joining animal advocacy since as long as I can remember. And then having my own dog probably inspired me even more.
I love that, like, child advocates are so inspiring. I feel like Sydney and I always talk about, like, here we were just like playing hopscotch when we could have been devoting more of our lives to things.
I know. And everyone's changing the world.
Yeah.
Making up for it now.
Absolutely. I know. Over time. So tell us, I know you have a wonderful degree. And then you've started this organization now. So can you talk a little bit about what that journey was like and how it brought you where you are today?
Yep, sure. So knowing that, I guess, animals was always something I felt very strongly about. So after I finished school, I studied animal welfare. And then I had a range role. So I was working for a dog shelter organization. I worked for a world international organization, an animal organization, and I worked for conservation organizations. And then in between, I did some government contracts to get a bit of an idea on, I guess, how it is from the other side, because that's who you're advocating against, to get a bit of experience in that sector. And then I decided to return to study for a bit. So I did a master's in animal welfare science, ethics and law, because when I was studying, those kind of courses were not necessarily available at that time. So I wanted to, I guess, expand my knowledge a bit more. And then I, 2019, I lived in Vietnam for just under a year, and I was working for, or volunteering actually, for an organization that is involved with illegal wildlife trade, or not involved with, but advocating against illegal wildlife trade. And so that was a real eye-opening experience, living and volunteering in Vietnam. And then whilst I was in Vietnam and coming to the end of my volunteering position, I saw a job vacancy at Humane Research Australia, which is now the organization I'm working for. So I was already aware of the organization. I'd been a member before and been to some of their events. And during my master's degree, I had studied freedom of information and animal advocacy. So I was very passionate about, I guess, transparency in animal research and the public being able to make an informed decision. So when I saw the position, I applied remotely from Vietnam and had the interview in Vietnam. And then I started that particular role in November of 2019, so pre-pandemic. And I was in the role probably for about just under a year. And then actually very sad circumstances, but our CEO passed away after a long battle of cancer. She'd been with the organization for 15 years and a really massive advocate for animals in, using experimentation. So now I'm following in her footsteps as our current CEO.
It sounds like you've just done so much. And like, for those of us who are more like grassroots animal welfare individuals, I mean, looking at your credentials are really astounding.
Yeah.
And I have to ask, where did you get your master's? Because I'm not confident a lot of places in the United States have animal welfare science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this one was through a UK university, University of Winchester, and it was an international course. So all international students and all online. So we had a student from Hawaii the time I was there, and South Africa, and then a lot from the UK as well. So it was I was the first intake of that particular course, but it's still going strong, and you can do it over 1 year or 3 years. So I did it over 3 years working at the same time.
It's just so inspiring, I think, because we have spoken with veterinary professionals who really got their degree maybe a few decades ago, and they spoke about how really animal welfare and animal rescue was not a part of the curriculum at all. It's bizarre to think that they were kind of spun up on the idea of like, this is your business. And the heart of why people got involved with animals was really kind of taken out of things. It's such an amazing idea that we're progressing to this place now where people can get their degree in animal welfare science. You are a different organization than we typically highlight, and one that we think is just so powerful and has so much to offer. So can you get into a little bit of what Humane Research Australia does and some of your programs?
Sure. Yep. So we're a nonprofit organization. We've been around for about 15 years in our current format. Primarily, we're an advocacy and campaigning organization, so promoting scientifically valid non-animal methods of research. So there's a whole range of different technologies now that have the potential to replace animals in biomedical research and education. So we are really, really raising public awareness that animal research is occurring, encouraging researchers to adopt other methods, raising transparency. We have a number of kind of priority campaigns. So one is for a ban on primate experimentation. The second one is a more recent campaign, which is focused on inhalation studies using mice, really trying to induce conditions that are generated from smoking. So exposing mice to smoke for long periods of time to induce disease and then studying that disease. And we have a range of other campaigns that I'm not sure if you're familiar, because there is some coverage of it in the US about the forced swim test that's used in universities. Is that something that you...
We'd love if you'd get into it, because I mean, we feel like our knowledge is ever expanding, and certainly we're drinking a lot of the Kool-Aid, because I know Sydney has a survivor of animal experimentation in her house right now that she's fostering. So it's something that we're super passionate about. I don't know how you can learn about this and not get so passionate about it.
Yeah. I was going to say, because the one question that we do get, because we did recently have a podcast with another organization that does advocate and rescue animals primarily from animal testing.
Yeah, I listened to that one. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the response that we were getting just from audiences and whatnot was, why do people still test on animals in the modern day and age? Have we not figured out another way to do this? And a lot of people just don't know. So it's you saying that there are other options is like, it's just so eye-opening. And I feel like it's just knowledge that's there. And I'm just so interested to hear about it.
Yeah. So I guess the forced swim test, that's a test that's been around for decades and really needs to be obsolete. So it's testing antidepressants, but it's using quite a crude test to giving those medication to mice and seeing how long it takes them to give up swimming in a beaker of water. So really very little translational value to human mental health, because human mental health, as you can, understand, was a long-term condition, and it's caused by multiple factors, and using a mouse with a different anatomy and expecting the results to translate, and when they are not. So a lot of pharmaceutical companies are no longer using this test, but unfortunately a lot of universities are. And we find with Australia, and I think probably more broadly internationally, a lot of the research is at universities. So basic research, really trying to find out more about diseases, but a lot of it, in our opinion, is really PhD studies or research that's just leading to more publications, but not really leading to outcomes for human health, which is where the emphasis should be.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It is so shocking. And I feel like that's the common rebuttal, right? They're like, yes, animals shouldn't be experimented on, but it's saving human lives. And it is so shocking when you realize that that's not at all the case. Sydney, perusing your website earlier, there's a list of pharmaceuticals that were tested on animals and they had negative repercussions because the results did not translate to humans.
Exactly. That does occur and can be very dangerous. And there's a lot of people that have adverse reactions to drugs that have been tested to be safe on animals. And I think a lot of it is it would have a different reaction depending on the species that it was tested on. And you can never predict how it's going to work in a human accurately. So we really promote human relevant research. So there's a whole range of different technologies now, but using human cells and growing mini organs or organ on a chip, epidemiology, human studies, there's just a whole range of different methods, computer modeling, using human data that are relevant to human biology instead of animal biology, because we're learning more and more about how to cure diseases in animals, but not in humans. And a lot of the conditions that are being induced in animals, they wouldn't be susceptible to those conditions, Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. So we're trying to replicate them and take knowledge from artificially induced diseases, which they would never experience the same symptoms as a human would.
And I did have this question posed to me a few days ago, and I was like, I'm doing a podcast with Rachel. I'm going to make sure I ask her. When it comes to animal testing, I feel like the subject is so broad. And when we say it, a lot of people are like, what kind of animal testing are you talking about? Do people still do cosmetic testing? Do they do pharmaceutical testing? I'm very familiar with the testing of both of those. Are there any testings outside of that that still go on today?
I would say, yeah, primarily pharmaceutical and kind of regulatory testing. It may be for household products. We do have a semi-ban on cosmetic testing in Australia now. So animals are not typically used, but they may be used if the ingredient is also used for other purposes, not just sole purpose of cosmetics. So it's a bit of a loophole there. And probably the other area is kind of, as I mentioned, basic academic research. So it doesn't have a specific result in mind, but it might be to find out something more about a particular condition. And then also a kind of agricultural research. So it's related to farm animals. And generally, there may be occasions where it's trying to improve the welfare of the animals, but often it's trying to improve productivity of those animals and encourage animal agriculture. And then within Australia, our approval system for animal research also includes conservation research. So some of that may be monitoring birds, or it may not all be invasive. So that's also a factor to pay into consideration. Some of it may be surgical training, and so that may be surgical training where vets are at vet school learning from people's pets that they've volunteered to be used, or from shelters. If that's supervised training, that wouldn't be something we'd necessarily be opposed to, but would also be considered in Australia animal research. So we're quite specific about the research that we would be opposing.
It is so shocking, and it is so widespread. I mean, you don't really realize that the different kinds of animals that are being experimented on as well. I mean, of course, we touch on dogs, which was a real shock to me, because I feel like they're part of our family, especially here in the United States, but I know around the world more and more, I mean, they're family members. And the fact that there are these animals that are stripped of any humane rights and being forced into this is heartbreaking, and definitely treated like a thing rather than a living, breathing creature.
Exactly.
So can you tell us maybe a little bit about what you're seeing? Are you specifically working with a lot of organizations in Australia, or are you seeing this as, are you focused on like an international effort to improve education and open people's eyes?
Yep. We kind of have a mixture of the two. We have some campaigns most of our campaigns are specific to the situation here. And that's because we have, you know, slightly different code or legislation than other countries. And we're focused on changing those specific codes or working with specific researchers here. But we do collaborate with other organizations. We collaborate quite closely with an organization in New Zealand, New Zealand Anti-Vivisection Society, because there's quite some parallels between the campaigns that we work on. And in terms of forced swim tests, we do work with PETA in the US on that. It's an issue that they're quite across and we're all really leading. And then there is a World Congress for Alternatives in the Use of Animals in Life Sciences. And so there's a whole range of organizations all across the world, Europe, the US, Canada, Asia, Africa, everywhere. So those groups, we didn't have an in-person congress this year, but that's where those animal protection organisations get together and work on issues. We've also worked in collaboration with other groups in Australia about the cosmetics ban, to have that ban in place. And we work with a range of groups on right to release. So that's similar to Beagle Freedom Project, to advocate for mandatory release of animal or dogs and cats at this point after they've been used in research. And there's a number of groups in Australia that work on the rehoming aspect. So we support those groups, Beagle Rescue Victoria or Beagle Freedom Australia, and there's a Liberty Foundation. So they do that amazing work as well. And I've been fortunate to adopt a couple of beagles from them. So that's been brilliant. Yes.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And see, that should have been our first question, to see if you have animals.
I know. Do you have a beagle?
I know. Sydney's such a sucker for a beagle. I love all the hounds.
Oh, yes.
But I was hearing, I mean, a little bit off topic, I was hearing that with hound breeds like beagles and coon hounds and things like that, they do have a lower adoption rate for whatever reason. People are less inclined to want to adopt them. And I'm like, as somebody who has a house full of hounds, I can't see why. They are the best things in the world.
I know. I think there's a lot of, there's a couple that do the rest of the service by destroying the house or escaping. Oh, and yes, they get that bad reputation.
Yes. The runners, the escapees. I totally understand that, but they are so gentle and just, yeah, they're great dogs.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, I mean, it sounds like you're doing so much, but I'm wondering if you can provide, I'd love a larger scale landscape of how you see the world. And I'm not sure if you have numbers or any idea as to who is doing a lot of the animal testing and who is most progressive, I would say.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's difficult because the statistics vary according to which country and how they collate them. But generally, the highest users are cited as the US, China, Japan, and Australia is usually fourth or fifth, which is pretty surprising given that we have in proportion quite a small population, but we usually are ranking quite highly. And there are some differences. I don't know if it was touched upon with any of your previous podcasts, but in the US, so many animals that are used in medical research, I think birds, fish, mice, and rats are excluded from recording. Because they're not covered by the Animal Welfare Act. So that's excluding so many that would be used. We do include those species here, thankfully. So it's very difficult to contrast, but generally they're the countries that are using the most. And in terms of progress, the country that comes to mind is the Netherlands, because they actually have their parliament agreed to a phase out of particular types of animal use by 2025.
Wow.
And have a transition plan on how they're going to achieve that. So that's really quite a leading action. And I guess the EU in general, they recently had a motion. They have legislation, a directive, which regulates animal experimentation with a kind of general goal to be ultimate replacement. But there's been a motion now to have a kind of concrete action plan to achieve that. So the EU and the Netherlands would stick out as examples. And I think there has been progress in the US in terms of the EPA and their decision that they'll be phasing out testing using mammals, I think, by 2035. I'm still a long time off, but it's, I think, and there's a lot of countries that have government funding and a commitment to at least trying to validate alternatives and drive change that way. But in Australia, we're lacking that. We don't have a specific validation center. So there's lacking that incentive for funders, researchers to obtain funding to develop new methods and use those other methods, because we don't have that particular stream or interest, although it's something that the government recommended, I think, in 1989, and we're still waiting for it.
Mm. And I was reading too that in this whole effort to push us towards that day where we can transition over to non-animal alternatives, I know that I was reading that you guys do focus on influencing the next generations, you know, diving into students and things like that. Do you do like educational like programs? Do you visit schools? Are you trying to get that implemented into curriculums to where, you know, students and future medical professionals and things like that are learning that there are other options?
Yeah. Most of our focus has been on the use of animals for dissection. So high school students, there's no requirement for schools to use animals in dissection in Australia, but many opt to do. And where they do, students should have an opt-out option. So we have a humane education loan program where we have alternatives that students can loan from us if they're not supplied with one. And we're working with the education department to promote that and the alternatives that are available, because it's still fairly widespread. And we're really of the opinion that if students are using animals in science at that early stage, then it's just reinforcing that that's what they're here for, and kind of putting that practice into place early. And then perhaps if they go on to study science, they'll see that as a method to keep continuing, or would like to be questioned at an early stage. And for those students who are opposed, it may put them off a career in science because they don't want to engage in that. And in terms of older students and young people, we've just employed a science outreach consultant about 2 months ago, and she'll be working with university. She's already met with a few students about different issues and doing talks and outreach. So we're at this point, it's been more, I guess, reactive to questions that we've had from students about what alternative can they use or what resource can they refer to try and find an alternative. But we're trying to be a bit more proactive in getting out to them and having talks and letting them know what resources we have available.
I love that. I love that opt-out option. I don't know if in Bridget, I don't know if in high school you did the dissection.
You were forced to.
Yeah. I was in college. One of my classes did it with, this is going to be so terrible. They did it with a piglet, and I couldn't opt out, and just seeing it was horrific. And I couldn't understand why that was an acceptable notion. And it's right. It does tell people that that's okay, or like that's what animals are used for. It does send a message, even though it's not maybe blatantly expressed.
Exactly. There's so many other methods they could use, the virtual dissections and new tools. There's a synfrog, which is replicating exactly the same feel. And so for those teachers that say, well, they have to actually experience that sensation, there is exact replicas that they can do that are non-harmful. So I think there's excuses and justification for it are running low, but it's just a culture. And perhaps some teachers don't want to be told how to teach certain things, which is understandable. But at the same time, things change. And when alternatives become available, they should be used.
True. Bigger picture.
Well, and I know for me, we were forced to do it in high school. So it's not like we were even pursuing a career in the sciences or a medical field. It's like we were a bunch of jokesters who were just trying to get through biology class, which feels so disjointed. It's like totally unnecessary. And I'm sure not a good environment. I know a lot of people were very upset about it. It was emotionally disturbing. And the whole room smelled like formaldehyde. So it was terrible. I love what you're saying too about the fact that pursuing this education is so important, because they could be deterring a whole level of people pursuing sciences and pursuing medical careers. And they're being discouraged from following that passion and that drive because of that humane impulse they have.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the kind of people you want to be working with.
Absolutely. It feels so bizarre when a profession that's meant to be so fact-based and science-based is doing something that is kind of opposing their whole ethos.
Exactly. And there has been a lot of studies kind of measuring the effectiveness of harmful versus non-harmful teaching methods. And they're shown to be just as efficient, if not superior. So, but that seems to be cast aside in making the decision. So hopefully there'll be more recent studies on that level of, so that will have some traction. We send it to all the departments of education here. This is the study, this is the results. Get that out as far as we can.
Well, so I know here too, there as many organizations as are actually like tracking the animal testing and experimentation that's going on in the States, there is a very real level of a smokescreen with the media and hiding this information, because certainly I think anyone who had a clear view of what is actually happening would be horrified. I'm wondering if it's the same in Australia. Do you feel like there is this kind of clandestine measure people that these organizations are taking to hide what they're doing?
Yes, definitely. And I don't know whether so much it's just the research institutions. I would also say the government as well, regulators. So it depends. We have some variances between the different states and territories in Australia. But if we are requesting information such as a list of license holders or which institutions are using dogs or cats, or has there been any adverse incident reports that have been reported, it's very unlikely we'll get that information. And they're not bound to provide that. We have a kind of code of practice, but it's quite vague in the terminology, and it will have requirements like consider making available information, which they would generally not do. So it's very difficult. If anything comes out in the media or there's a challenge, we receive a standard response that, oh, the research has been approved and it's according to the law and everything is to a high standard. But there's no really evidence of that because we can't see footage. We can't receive abstracts of the research that's been approved. We ask the funding bodies, can you break down the funding that you allocate according to animal or non-animal research? Then we can record trends. That isn't granted. And each state and territory is collecting statistics related to how many animals they use and the degree of suffering and the purpose of the research. But some publish it, some don't. They publish it according to different timeframes and different categories. And some don't even collate it. So there's no national oversight or reporting mechanism to see any trends. So we just try and get as much information as we can and share it. We get it from FOI requests, from research publications. So we can generally get quite a bit of information from, I guess, academic research, which is mostly what we focus on. But in terms of pharmaceutical research or chemicals testing, that is much harder to, because they may not be doing publications of that for, I guess, business reasons. So it's hard to get a really clear idea of what's happening.
It seems particularly challenging from what we've seen with organizations that are trying to have an immediate impact on the lives of these animals.
Mm-hmm.
I know there is this exchange that happens of, like, if you keep this secret, we'll release these animals to your care.
Yeah.
And I feel like they may not be able to say the names of these organizations, but I feel like that information alone should frighten people and should get out there. That, is it too far to say depravity? I feel like it's depraved to put an animal in that position where, in order to keep a secret, their life is literally on the line.
Right.
It's a very difficult situation for those groups because they're aware of, well, to some degree, of what's happened in their conditions, but they have to keep the relationships and build new ones to be able to rescue the animals. And it must be so hard for them to take in all that information and not be able to just get really angry and tell everyone about what's happened. And
I didn't realize this too until I started fostering JJ, who is the animal testing survivor. I didn't realize that what a lot of these laboratories do is that if they are going to release these animals to rescues or to people, they do sometimes demand that rescue sign NDA, like almost like legal terms, like they require them to sign NDAs, which then promotes or increases this huge smokescreen. We can't publicly tell people what's happening and people stay in the dark as far as animal testing because they're just finding ways to keep this a secret. And it's, if you're forcing people to sign an NDA just to release that dog, you're obviously not doing something good to that dog. You're not doing something that's beneficial. You're doing something wrong.
Exactly. And I mean, when they won't disclose information about dog or cat research, they will relate it to the safety of their staff because they fear that they may, which appraisals, which may I don't think is very likely to happen because we don't have a history of kind of attacks on facilities here. And there's no evidence that that would happen, but that would generally be the defense that they would use. But at the same time, you do think if you were doing something that you're proud of, then you wouldn't be hiding it.
Mm-hmm. I was reading a little bit more, and I know you do have some information as far as how the language is and how we talk about animal testing, how people, the vernacular that surrounds this whole issue, how it reinforces kind of society's acceptance of animal experimentation as something that's going to be necessary. Can you go into a little bit about that?
Yeah, I guess it's just in terms of when you're reading publications and you hear it discussed, you will often hear it will just be lab rat or rather than animals in laboratory, or it will be, trying to think of another term, quite often they'll say the animal was sacrificed, but really it's killed at the end of experiment, or they might say euthanized, but really it's been killed. We tend to say animals in experimentation rather than animal research. And generally there's a couple of reasons for that, because research sounds like it's always got an outcome, and animal experimentation sounds a little bit more as if it's like, as it is an experiment. And at the same time, some research, animal research might be, like as I said, conservation research or animal welfare research. So that we wouldn't be necessarily opposing depending on the nature of it.
I was going to say, yeah, even like the term research, it doesn't necessarily have a negative connotation. It because you think of like academic research, you think of good things. Of course, when it comes to animal research, that's not, it's generally not the case.
A good point to consider as we talk about, you will find that pro-animal research organizations will try and portray it as kind of pro-science and research as opposed to animal activists. But really, there's a lot of people who are scientists that don't use animals. So we will say scientists using animals or scientists not using animals, because it's not a case of being opposed to science or opposed. We're really promoting scientific progress. So we're quite clear about that distinction as well.
I even wonder, and not to get too like, this might be heading down the wrong vein, but like thinking about all of this and what these individuals are doing to these animals, I wonder if there has to be some sort of human cost to this too. Like, I feel like it's like you're sacrificing some level of empathy that's innate in every person, and you're kind of ingraining this idea. And I wonder what cost that's having to our culture and society as a whole.
Yes, I think that's definitely a factor, because a lot of people may study animal welfare or study animal science, and then they got a job as an animal technician. And actually, animal technician jobs here are very well paid for quite short hours. So that is quite attractive to someone who lives in a regional area where there's a research facility and no other way to apply their qualifications. And their interests may be to try and do the best they can for those animals under their care. But ultimately, most of them will be euthanized at the end of the process, and they're going to likely be used in processes that the housing conditions and the stress and the procedures that they're undergoing are not going to be pleasant. So a lot of those animal caretakers, they may do their best to try and help those animals, but I guess part of a larger system where they're used for a different purpose, where their welfare is going to take less precedence than the outcome of the research. So I think it would be very stressful for those people with the right intentions. And similarly, you may have a vet or a member of the public who sits on an animal ethics committee, and they're responsible for approving the research applications. And a lot of those, I think, people would go in with the best of intentions. And we do speak to members of those committees anonymously, and they're really there to do their best. But you find that quite often there's a culture of bullying or harassment on those animal ethics committees, and anyone who's trying to oppose something will be treated very badly by the researchers, or to the point where they then feel like they're not making a difference and the research is still being approved and they end up leaving. So I think the culture of animal ethics committees as well is another major issue from the experience we have here in Australia, and I think internationally, because if they're just rubber stamping research without thorough scrutiny, and those people who really actually have an interest in making a difference are being, I guess, forced out, then that isn't a good culture to have.
Absolutely. It is so heartbreaking. And I know it's something similar that we've seen is like, I know there are so many people that go into animal sheltering, and then especially in situations where there's a lot of overcrowding, and they're forced to be doing euthanasias every day, every week. And I know there is a very real toll of heartbreak and people who are suffering from anxiety because of it. And it becomes really overwhelming for a lot of people. And that's why there's such a high turnover rate in those roles a lot of times.
Yep, definitely.
And then the people who end up being able to kind of push through get so hardened that you lose that humanity.
Yeah. It's a very difficult situation, because we don't know whether we should encourage people to sit on those committees so that they do speak up. But at the same time, you can't sit on a committee and reject every single application, you would be off the committee pretty quickly. So you'd have to be quite selective and hope you can have an influence. But then you might feel the responsibility yourself, because you were part of a body that approved it. And then you might start, you know, facing those challenges from the co-people on the committee. So we don't really like to encourage our supporters necessarily to go in that direction, because it's a significant demand on them time-wise, emotionally. And if they do then succumb to those issues, then it's for no end goal.
Absolutely. Well, so I wonder if you can maybe give us an idea of the landscape of animal welfare in general in Australia. Because I know, a lot of people who are going to be listening in on this are going to be in the Midwest or just generally in the United States. I think you guys feel so far away, and you feel even further because of COVID, because none of us can go visit you. Yeah.
Yeah. I would probably compare it quite similarly in terms with the US, in terms of, looking at animals and agriculture is still quite an intensive system here compared to the EU, where there's much more stringent legislation. So in those terms, I would say quite similar with the US. We also have the issues with over well, I don't know if you think you would call it overpopulation, but overbreeding, or people choosing the wrong dogs and then returning them to the pound. So dogs unnecessarily being euthanized, but probably not to the same degree as the US. But again, population size and so makes it hard to compare, but that is also an issue. And we have quite substantial issues with protection of the native species and conservation. I did hear, I can't remember the exact statistic, but it's one of the highest rates of, I guess, biodiversity loss in the world, unfortunately. So I think there are, yeah, it was definitely behind the EU, but probably quite comparable to the US on quite a few issues. And we still have kind of use of animals for entertainment, some of it rodeos and those kind of issues that you wouldn't maybe have in the US that you don't have in other countries. Still a lot of improvements to be made. And I think a lot of it is just, it isn't, or there will be cases of cruelty, but it's institutionalized cruelty, really, rather than, you know, the isolated case of someone abusing their dog. It's the kind of hidden abuse that's taking place in industrial agriculture or research laboratories.
Ugh, it's heartbreaking and just shows how similar, I guess, we all are, that we're all struggling with the same problems. I know you're taking a lot of steps to make a lot of changes. So could you give an idea of some initiatives and some ways people can get involved and start making changes? I mean, whether they're in Australia or anything that you are encouraging those to do.
Yeah, I guess like the first thing, which we've already talked a little bit about, is see if there is an adoption or fostering you can do from a local organization that has rehomed an animal from a research facility, and promoting any of the campaigns that they do, whether that be improving legislation or right to release legislation or those kind of measures, sharing resources. So we always encourage people. We have a range of different videos on different issues in YouTube to share those, just so people know what's happening. One thing which people often, they think about making cruelty-free choices in terms of cosmetics, but we have an initiative here, the Humane Charities List, and I'm not sure if there'll be an equivalent one in the US, but I imagine that there probably would be. So thinking about which charities you donate to, because a lot of the medical research organizations will be using animals in the research that they partake in or contribute towards. So we have a range of health-related charities that are not using animals, and we encourage people to donate to those, because it's quite difficult to, well, it's impossible to direct where your tax dollars go, and a lot of that will be to animal research, but at least with your own donations, and similarly, the companies that you may choose to invest in or banking, ask questions, because the more people questioning these practices and being responsible with their own funds, the better, I think. And so they're probably the main things I would say. Be aware, if you're at university, ask about the research that's taking place at your university, because a lot of people might be happening on their campus and they don't even know about it. So yeah, always question things and spread the word about what's happening and take part in any actions that come up from local organizations, because I think the changes will only come about if enough people contact their representatives or contact companies and say, we don't agree with this. Or if you're a researcher, consider there's a whole range of different networks that they can join that are promoting human relevant research. So investing in those and learning more about those, because I think that is the future of research for their own and for their own professional benefit as well as ethical benefit. It's good to be across these methods and be using them.
Absolutely. And I love the idea that getting that information out there is making it a little bit easier for that researcher who wants to be kind and understands animals as living creatures. So I love the idea that you're not just helping to end this practice, but you're also easing that suffering and making sure that the right people are in the right positions as well, and they're not being worn down.
Yeah.
Additionally, I mean, and I know this is the same in the United States, but the idea that your tax dollars are funding this, because, I mean, at least I know in our case, government grants are being given for needless medical research that it's not making human life any better. It's not saving lives. It's basically just for
research,
just for money.
Curiosity.
Basically. Instead, taking that step to donate to an organization that's working against this and or to save animals in general, you're really counterbalancing that, you're shifting things to a different direction.
Yeah.
So important. Thank you so much for chatting with us. I feel like this was so enlightening, and certainly one day we hope to see this change in the United States, in Australia, and all around the world. We have to ask a little bit more about your beagles, though.
Yes.
So tell us, what are your beagles' names?
So the older one, who's two, her name is Ava. And the little one, who's going to actually be one tomorrow.
Aww.
Yes, her birthday, first birthday tomorrow. Her name is McGill.
Aww. That's so sweet.
Yes. And one is a little bit big and the other's really small. So, and they just absolutely love one another. So it's beautiful to see them together.
I love it. Are they little angels or are they a bit naughty? And because I know Sydney's beagle's a little,
he's got a bark.
Yes, they like to have their say. They are a little bit naughty, but compared to some of the beagle stories I hear, I think I've got it quite good. They need a lot of exercise and they need a lot of activity, but they get that. And they're swimming away at the beach and doing their little activities, and got a lot of friends and going to doggy daycare, and they're, I think, better treated than myself. So
that's usually the case. I see those shirts and whatnot. My dog has a better life than I do, or things like that.
Yeah. They're beautiful dogs and they just make you laugh every day.
Mm, love it. We're so grateful that they have you. Thank you again for joining us. This was so insightful and we so appreciate you taking the time.
You're very welcome. Nice to speak with you both, and all the best.
It was really such an honor to be able to connect with Rachel and to better understand everything this incredible organization is doing. We really are shocked at the human loss that comes at experimentation on animals, whether it be that of an emotional toll or how drugs lack a translation between animal and human anatomy. It's really shocking, and we're so honored for the opportunity to highlight this organization's story a little bit. So if you want to learn a little bit more about Humane Research Australia, you can check our show notes or our blog.
And as always, remember to rate, like, and subscribe to this podcast. And be sure to follow Cuddly on all social media accounts at We Love Cuddly. That's CUDDLY. Thanks, guys.